Okay, let's start the show.
For Thursday, June 18th, 2020, welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. Hey, that was pretty good.
What was that?
That was new intro music, courtesy of one of you out there, Joe Marlin. Thank you so much for submitting that. We put out a call for new intro music last week, and a few of you answered that call. So we're going to try every submission that's sent in.
Wow.
Even if it's no good, we're going to try it. I mean, that's what you get. If you're going to participate, we're gonna reward you with that. The parameters are keep it about 15 seconds long. I think the whole reason we wanted to switch out and change it up is because our old intro music was a little bit too long for some folks at 45 seconds. But this one's pretty good. It's my favorite one so far.
Is there a vocal that's in the end there? I couldn't make out what it was saying.
It was saying, this is only a test. It sounded synthesized. I don't know if it was a distortion of something that we said or completely computer generated. But so far, hey. It's at the top of the list right now. Well, welcome for joining us this week. If you're not watching the video, well, Jeremy, you heard him already. Jeremy, how you doing?
I'm well. Thank you for asking.
Nice t-shirt you got there. Spaceships of all different sizes arranged in a circle.
Yep. Frank Very Sinatra cool. quote at the bottom.
Oh, what's the quote? I can't read it.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars.
It does look like a moon of some kind. And Kishore is not here this week, taking the week off, but we do have a special guest, Bill Duran. Bill, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. And while I'm not Kishore, I grew up like an hour east of him in Oswego. And I could talk about hockey if you guys want to, but I probably don't know as much as him.
Well, really, if you wanted to fill the shoes of Kishore, all you need to do is kind of throw in the hockey references once in a while.
Yep.
Definitely Thanos. If you could drop us some Thanos lore.
Sure.
That'd be good. And then, you know, but 15 minutes of science and reassurance. I want to know, after 15 minutes, I want to feel better about the state of the world and what's coming up. Can you do that for us?
I'll do my best, but I can't promise anything. Kishore is a superhero when it comes to that.
sure is. But how are you doing? How's it been? We've talked since the lockdown in March, but we haven't really shared. And you did a video for us about some of the projects that people can work on. But let's hear how's the Punish Pops Academy going, and
sure.
What's going on in your world?
Well, first of all, I haven't got to hang with you guys since Maker Faire last year, which was amazing. I loved it so much, and I'm glad I went. But it has been a while. Since then, we've been continuing to make prop and costume videos over on our YouTube channel. Although in the last few months, we haven't really because of the lockdown and because of the pandemic, but also because we've been working on our third book. So that's one of the main ways we've been staying busy during all of this. In mid-March, when the pandemic really took off, we took it very seriously, had our employee work from home, and then we also have been working from home for the most part. We go into the shop about once a week to fulfill orders, make sure everything's still standing. And then we've been home doing whatever work we can do from home. And a huge part of that has been working on Foamsmith 3, our third foam prop and costume making book.
How do you keep yourself, I mean, writing is one of those things that even if we weren't in a lockdown, mm-hmm. writers have, you know, it's tough to keep on schedule and get motivated to do that. Does the lockdown make it easier, or are you finding distractions? Like, what's your strategy for keeping on a schedule, not knowing when this is going to end?
Yeah. So part of that is we don't have any deadline for when this book needs to get out. Now, I would like to get it out as soon as possible because that's how I earn my living. But we didn't have a really solid deadline. We just knew it had to get done soonish. Before the lockdown went in place, we had done almost all the writing and photos. We just had some like pickup photos to get. I took over 800 photos for the book, so it took a long time to sift through those. So a lot of the lockdown stuff was Brittany, my wife, mostly working on the layout of the book.
The fun stuff.
And then, yeah, fun stuff. Making the book look really pretty.
Exactly.
And then talking back and forth with our printing company to get all of the dimensions and everything correct. For example, You don't know how wide the spine of a book needs to be until you know how many pages are in the book. And the printing company needed to know that so they could send us a template so that our cover would be the correct dimensions for printing. So lots of little things like that we've been able to do that take a little bit of time. They're really nitpicky, but we've gotten those squared away, and I'm happy to report that our books are being printed. So that's very exciting.
Can people like do a pre-order for that now?
We don't have that yet. I can give you a preview of the cover, though.
Ooh. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So the book is all using EVA foam to make headgear, like helmets.
Is that a photograph?
That is me and a photograph of a helmet I made.
I mean, that looks like an illustration. That's a beautiful photograph.
Thank you very much. I am very proud of the helmet and the photo on that one. And also, fun story, this is my third book, and it's the first time my face is on the cover. My other two books, I took the photos. So the first one was my friend April wearing an undead Draugr mask, so you couldn't tell it was her. And then the second book, the face was obscured, but the person in the costume was my wife, Brittany. So this third book, I finally get to be on the cover, which is very exciting for me.
And helmets is the big theme, all the templates and everything. Mm-hmm. Is it interesting as you look at your first book, the layouts, the photos, your own writing, and where you are on the third book? Can you see the differences?
Yeah, and Brittany and I both dumped tons of work into this book, and we're both very, very proud of it. We didn't hold anything back, and it definitely feels like the culmination of years of not just the knowledge and experience we've been learning as we've been working, but also getting better at making like books and making books that look good and look really, really legit. Because it is literally me and Brittany doing the entire thing, just two people. And Paige helped. She did some illustrations, but it's a two-person thing, and we produced a whole friggin' book. And apparently, a bunch of them are going to show up at my shop this week. So it's just all very exciting.
Are you having that printed on demand, or does your publisher require like a minimum, like guaranteed, number?
So we are doing all the publishing. We're paying for all of it, and our printing company. It's just a matter of how many we order, and if we order more, because it's offset printing versus on demand, we get a discount. So we're confident we're going to sell more on this launch than we did 4 years ago, because hopefully we sell more. So we ordered more this time and got a discount on the printing, a healthy discount, which is awesome. Printing on demand, we used to do when we did lower volume, but it was more than double the expense.
Wow. And probably lesser quality, like printing, I would imagine.
It depends. The quality of printing really depends on who you work with. I've seen really, really good on-demand printing, and I've seen really, really bad offset printing. So once you find a printing company you work really well with, you stick with them. And ours has been fantastic.
That's incredible. You guys take a photo of the pallet of book boxes that are going to arrive. And
two pallets.
Two pallets. And it's going to be on you guys out there listening to help Bill empty those
pallets.
Clear out the garage. And do our part, because you guys are really an inspiration, not only the props you guys make, but also this whole sharing of information, which a lot of people have, I think, followed suit and taken inspiration from you guys to start sharing that as well, making the writing of their own books. And it's become this really good source of institutional knowledge.
Absolutely. Actually, speaking of books, it's ending today. So I don't know if people are going to hear it in time, but Humble Bundle did a cosplay bundle. We've been spreading the word already. That's ending today. That's really, really good. So if you haven't seen that and you hear it in time, I recommend checking it out. I have three books in it.
Oh, very, very awesome. Well, that's great to hear. Great to hear that both you and Britt are doing great. And that Punisher Props Academy is moving along. But we're going to talk about a lot more stuff as well as we get to, if I time this right. Nope, I completely messed it up. Here we go.
Story this week.
You know, we recorded the podcast last week right before, I think it was the morning of, or like just hours before Sony's big PlayStation 5 event, which if you haven't heard, well, they showed off the design for the PS5. But so you're going to get your week old hot takes. I don't know if you saw the spill. Are you a Microsoft guy over PlayStation guy? I know you up in the Seattle area. That's Microsoft country.
It is, and I used to work at Microsoft, but no, we're a PlayStation family.
I know that Bill has an Oculus Quest, I think, at this point.
I do. Right? I just got one.
We're going to talk about that too. A lot of PR stuff. But what do you guys think of first the design of the PS5? Let's talk about that before we get to the games.
I'm pro PS5. I thought I was going to be in the minority, but apparently, like, actually, according to IGN, 67 whatever percent of their viewers like the look, and I'm fine with it. Like, first of all, honestly, I don't care. It's going to go somewhere in my living room, and I'm going to play games, and I'm not going to be staring at the console. I'm going to be looking at the TV. By all accounts, the graphics are going to look phenomenal. But the console, you know, whatever. It's big. It looks like a computer. It should. It's a computer. You know, it's a fancy case. And apparently, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, it's not just for looks, if it's also got some serious heat dissipation that it has to do.
So it's really interesting because the video that was shown, the CG render essentially of this form factor of the PS5, if you haven't seen it, you know, the immediate gut reaction is that it looks different. I think Sony has always been bold in their design. I mean, you could say the Xbox One and the Xbox 360 were also bold in terms of, like, big statement pieces on your entertainment center, the thing that lives on your TV. But over the years, that has kind of shifted. If you think of the type of devices that we put under the TV, everything tries to blend in, from Apple TV to your Roku boxes. Things are getting smaller. It's only the game consoles that need the volume, that need the physical space, because they are computers, because they have big GPUs in them. They need the heat dissipation. You know, they need place for the Blu-ray slot drive. And what wasn't shared with the PS5 design was the actual size of it compared to the current generation of consoles. And I think some people did do some analyses to try to scale based on the controller size.
It was based on the drive size.
Oh, the drive size, right. Because there's a one slot. Presumably that slot drive is the same as what you would find on a slot drive on any other Blu-ray player or the Xbox. And apparently it's, and the USB, also the USB port. But it looks like it's supposed to be much bigger.
Big.
Than any console that's been released in the past decades or two decades. Like, PS3 was big. Remember how PS3 was like the big, it tried to hide how voluminous it was with the curve, and then also like the jutted rectangular part that was underneath, that was hidden under the curve. Same with, I think, PS2 was also bigger than the form factor kind of hinted at.
This is bigger.
This is even bigger. It's taller. It's wider. Although the Xbox One Series X, if I'm naming that correctly, the other next-gen consoles coming out this year, that one's supposed to be like the size of a mini tower, like a mini ITX computer, real wide, maybe not as tall as the PS5. So this generation of console, going back to really big game consoles,
right?
And it's unavoidable.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with it. I have a gaming PC next to my TV that I don't even care what looks like. So I don't care what the PlayStation looks like. I will say the controllers, though, I've always been a fan of the PlayStation controllers, and the new ones, I think, look like they came out of Astrobot, and I am for it.
Yeah, they really have leaned in that, right? The white, half black, yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious about how they're doing the VR tracking with it, because the current controllers have a light on the front that the camera can see, and they have shown that they're sticking with a camera solution. That's the one aspect of any kind of VR hint that we got from this announcement, was the camera. And it's a stereo camera that sits up there, and you got to assume that it's like the PS5 version of what they have now. But how is it going to track the controllers if the controllers don't have that kind of that light on the front? I'll be curious about that.
I know the camera, the new eyes or whatever they call it, PSI or the camera is improved over the existing camera, and is one way they could do tracking for PS5 VR, whatever that is, because there will be backward compatibility that they confirmed with existing PSVR. So you do need the camera system to work with your existing PSVR light-based tracking. But that's not to say they couldn't do an inside-out space tracking system on next-generation PSVR.
And I'm talking about the controllers.
Right. But if they did an inside-out based tracking, the controllers wouldn't need to be webcam based, like PSI based. We don't know what's under the controllers if they are IR lights either.
Oh, you're wondering if the headset will track the controllers?
Yeah.
I see. I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, perhaps.
I mean, that's cool. It's something that works with the touch controllers on the Oculus side, on the Quest side,
right?
And hand tracking there. So as long as, you know, PSVR current headset's already pretty big, there's definitely enough space there if they wanted to do an inside out space tracking solution for that to work. So I'd be slightly disappointed if the PSI was the only way they did some type of 3D tracking on PSVR going forward.
Right, because it does tend to limit your ability to rotate button in a full circle.
Yes, and it's a little bit finicky, and it's the worst of all the tracking solutions at this point. There will be two versions of the PS5, an all digital edition, no disc, no Blu-ray, and the disc edition. No pricing for either. And form factor wise, they look very similar, except that the one with the slot drive just juts out at the bottom. It's not symmetrical, but that's the one that will play Blu-rays. So finally, a PlayStation will do native Blu-ray playback on Sony's own Blu-ray format.
Do you guys still buy Blu-rays?
Yeah.
Very occasionally.
I haven't bought a Blu-ray in over a year. I mean, and I don't intend to. So I'm thinking probably I'm in the digital realm, but because I do have technically have a library of Blu-rays, maybe that one, I guess it comes down to price.
I think it comes down to price. I'm always happy to pay, let's say, $5 more for a Blu-ray, because most Blu-rays come with a digital code.
Yeah.
And so I get the convenience of loading it up on iTunes anyway for just quick of playback. But I do notice the difference in the quality on the bitrate with the Blu-ray versus the streaming stuff. It's like five times, the bitrate.
Of course. But you're saying that you don't get, like, you need that quality difference in order to appreciate the film. If you're watching something on Netflix or HBO. Or iTunes, are you distracted by the compression artifacts?
No, but I'm also, if I want to show off the TV, or if I feel like it's a special occasion and I'm not, and I can take the extra 10 minutes to boot up the Xbox to play the Blu-ray, then I'm going to take out the Blu-ray and play it.
Do you show off your TV a lot?
Yes, he does.
Not in the past 3 months.
No. But when I went to your house most recently, you were like, let's load up Terminator 2 on this giant TV. And I sat there for 2 hours and I watched the whole thing. It was amazing.
not so recently.
No, it was quite a while ago.
Yeah, but I actually did just get a new TV test. And, and so I will be testing Blu-rays on that in the next month or so. So the games for PS5, that's what the event really was about, right? I think they showed off almost two dozen new games, including sequels, some remakes, and we can just go down the list. Some of the big highlights: Insomniac, which is now owned by Sony. They made the Spider-Man game, which is a massive, massive success for them. Still highly recommended. They announced the sequel, standalone sequel, which is Spider-Man Miles Morales. Did you play this game, Jeremy?
I own the game. My son has played it, and it is like top of my list if I ever sit down on the TV to play a PlayStation game, which honestly, I haven't done since the robot game, the VR game.
Astrobot. Yeah. Astrobot. Yeah.
But by all accounts, it's like one of the best games ever made. And so I want to play it, and I'm super excited for this, for the Miles Morales version.
Yeah.
They did an amazing job doing their version of New York, and the game looks amazing if you have 4K HDR, if you have a PS4 Pro, essentially. And it's really easy to jump into. It's in the same vein as those Batman games, and you can mash buttons, you can learn your combos, and you can jump in and kind of do free exploration of the city and jump in and stop some crime if you want.
I still haven't played that one yet, and I think you actually showed me that game just before you played the Terminator movie. I believe last time I saw that game was you showing it off to me, and I don't know why I never picked it up, but it's definitely on my list. And the new one looks amazing.
I guess the new one's not supposed to be like as big in scope as the first one, right? It's a smaller game. That's what they've said.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine that it'll be smaller in terms of the amount you get to explore, because if it's a PS5 game, and one of the big benefits of PS5 is the the geometry streaming, right? The world, you can do larger open worlds, bigger, more detailed open worlds. They're going to want to show that off as much as possible. And so while maybe the story isn't as expansive, and
yeah,
the first Spider-Man game had this, you know, multi-hour big narrative, I still hope to see a good amount of that in Miles Morales. But these games are really, for me, more about just the web slinging. And if you can web sling faster and you can see and go more places because of the PS5's capabilities, that's what I'll be playing this game for. Very excited. He was a character in the first one, so they really hinted at and alluded to Miles Morales becoming Spider-Man. It's not the interpretation that was in Into the Spider-Verse. It's the video game world version of Peter Parker and Miles Morales. So it's kind of, they're building their own version, their own corner of the Spider-Man universe. Another big showcase on the PS4 for graphics for TVs was Horizon Zero Dawn. That was another one where big open world game, but if you had a, you know, 4K TV and you had 30 hours to spend, it was a beautiful, beautiful game. That's one I didn't really own, but still haven't had a chance to crack into. But they did announce a sequel, Horizon Forbidden West. It's revisiting that same post-apocalyptic world with robot dinosaurs. Still got bow and arrow, and it looks really good.
Yep.
That was exciting. Brittany played a bunch of that one. And Aloy and a lot of those characters are extremely popular for cosplayers to dress as. So I'm sure we'll see many, many more of those. Just really interesting and fun take on that type of artwork as costumes.
Absolutely, and it's one of those character designs where it allows cosplayers to tap into different mixed media for mm-hmm. for like all the sewing that you can do, all the kind of accessories. It's not just, you can have foam weapons, you can have armor, but it's really reads as more than just your standard superhero.
Yeah, and you got lights. Some of the stuff have really neat effects. Fur, like just yes. everything. And the yes. people who do costumes from that game are just supremely dedicated.
Yeah. Same with the foam dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. I think, was it Legacy who did one for them as a big puppet? One of the special effects firms for right. Sony, and it was gorgeous. No Comic-Con this year, so we won't be able to see that in person, but looking very cool. There's also, in terms of Sony exclusive, Gran Turismo has always been a big system seller, especially in Japan. So you got GT7 coming to PS5 at launch. It looks even more photo real than the last Gran yep. Turismo's, right? That's what they've always gone for. But I guess it looks like they're leaning into more of the audio capabilities for this one, which is hard to communicate through a YouTube trailer. But you know, if you're going to deck out your home entertainment system and you want full immersion, you know, obviously it'll support your wheels. And so PS5 getting GT7. Ratchet and Clank. I'm not going to go through all 24 of these games, I promise. But I'm just calling out some of the highlights. Yeah. Ratchet and Clank. Again, big nostalgia fan, like big fan base for PlayStation owners. And the big thing that stood out for this trailer was, again, the world streaming capabilities. The fact that you can jump between dimensions and do it seamlessly. It was almost like, have you guys seen Guardians Galaxy 2 when mm-hmm. they kind of jump through those space portals, like dozens of them at once?
Yeah.
It had a very visual effect where like it was literally a hexagonal hole in the world, in the sky, and Ratchet and Clank are flying through it, and you're going from one type of world immediately to different types of environments.
Yes.
Portals.
Yeah. And we saw a Lombax? Is that what Ratchet's race is? A Lombax?
Yes, a female version.
Female blue Lombax. And of course, a cosplayer I follow is already making that costume.
Oh, really?
She has the head done already, and it looks awesome. Willow Creative is doing it. It's going to be great.
Just a few more. There are two really aesthetically gorgeous games that new IPs. One's called Kena: Bridge of Spirits.
I was wondering if you're going to mention this one. This is probably the game that I'm most excited about. I know nothing about it, but it is just stunning to look at. Like, it looks like a cartoon.
Yes. And
it looks like it has fantastic combat, but it also seems to have this kind of Pikmin mechanic where you're controlling all these minions of creatures that live in the forest, and like you're trying to, it's one of those things like Flower, where you turn dead to life by, you know, fighting off evil in the forest. It just looks awesome. I can't wait to see what this game's all about.
It's like a Miyazaki movie turned into a video game.
Right? Yeah.
Totoro the game is, that was probably their pitch, their selling point. Explore, live amongst the world of these woodland creatures and their mystical stories. And then if you go from full nature to full cyberpunk, Stray is the other one that got the internet really excited. Cyberpunk world looks gorgeous, all neon lights, except you are exploring this world as a cat, as a stray cat.
It's like a computer came up with this concept.
Yeah.
Like it looked at the internet and it like said, cyberpunk and cats are super exciting right now.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm
really excited.
Game, right. But cat game, but cyberpunk futuristic cat game.
Yeah.
People are going nuts over that.
I'm sold.
Then you got GTA 5, another remake coming of that.
Can you believe that this is a PS3 game. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not. It's one of the best games ever made. Like, great. Let's upsample it. Let's put it on PS5. But I can't believe that we had a PlayStation generation without its own Grand Theft Auto game.
They spent all that money on Red Dead, and I'm happy for it. And these games are hundreds of millions of dollars to develop, especially all the performance capture and the mocap that they need. You know, it didn't blow my mind in terms of what what GTA 5 looks like. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you need to buy it a third time.
Yeah,
for PS5. And then finally, Astrobot. Speaking of which, Astrobot is coming to PS5 in Astro's Playroom. So it's the same cute, cuddly world. This is essentially Sony's Ubisoft Rabbids. It's their Minions, right? Like Universal has the Minions franchise, which I think were highly influenced by the Ubisoft Rayman Rabbids. And that was like the Nintendo Wii generation of cute cuddlies. And Sony has their adorable Astrobots. And no VR mention in this trailer, but it looks cute. And it's one of they have a great lineup. I think it's going to be on Microsoft to come back and say, we have these great games that are also going to be exclusives. But Sony's done a really great job. And I guess all we're waiting for is price. What do you guys
Bill,
think?
We made our guesses last week. What do you think, Bill?
So there's two versions, probably like $600 for the one with a drive and like $500 for the one without. That'd be my guess.
Yeah.
That was our guess also. Part of me thinks that it's going to go higher.
Yeah.
It's gonna go $550.
That's the thing, is like this, what's in there is certainly worth that. Like but will it sell? This has been a tough year for a lot of people to begin with. But even in the case of, like, if you just look at console history, $500 is the top that's ever been truly successful. So they're asking for trouble if they go far beyond that, I think.
And will people be okay paying $500 for something that doesn't have the Blu-ray player, right? That is a kind of a mental thing. When you think of discless consoles, you always think of like the Xbox One S. You think of that as the budget version, and it might be difficult for people, even though it's downloading games is ubiquitous. There's a whole culture of people who buy discs, who collect discs, who go to their GameStops, you know, if those are still around, or buy on Amazon and like having the physical copy, because sometimes these game updates and the downloads can be 50 gigs, 80 gigs, and they want to have that backup. And so maybe $500 for this list sounds right, because that already feels like a high price, especially since game prices are going to still be $60.
Well, the disc list also locks the user into, you know, official copies of the game that they purchased from Sony. Like the one that takes the drive, like every console before it, you're going to be able to buy used copies of the games, which, you know, cuts Sony out of the loop.
Yeah,
which is good for gamers, but bad for Sony. So I wonder if Sony can correctly like quantify the amount of money they will recoup from these, you know, digital versions of the console, and if that can be worked into the price, thus lowering it.
I think there would be a coup for sure if they announced the discless, the digital version at $400. If digital came in at $400, people would be very, very excited. And one of the reasons I'm like, secretly hoping that they'll do that is because the business model is really across all the game companies shifting to subscriptions. Xbox, Microsoft and Sony, like, yes, they want to take your hundreds of dollars for a console, and this may very well be the last physical big console that these companies push behind before they really lean into cloud streaming 5 years from now. Yes, they want you to pay $60 for a game and cut out a GameStop by selling it to you directly and cut out the Amazon by selling it to you directly. But they also want you to pay $10 a month, $100 a year to get, you know, and they make much, much more money in the long run doing that than they do selling you one console that someone buys maybe two or three games for a year. Yeah, it's a very different strategy than Nintendo, who is not about the subscription service. So they do have one, you know, but it's bare bones. You get the classic games, and Nintendo's really all about making money on the hardware and their first party games. So plenty to think about for PS5. Again, it's on with no E3. It's on Microsoft to have their own big event to show us what they got for the Xbox One, Xbox Series X. And it's going to make for an exciting holiday season.
Yes.
All right, let's move on to then. Bill, what was the last convention you went to physically in person?
Oh, geez. Probably Dragon Con last year. Yeah, that had to be it. Man, I didn't even think about that. It feels like 10 years ago.
Yeah. And because the lockdown happened basically right around Emerald City.
Yeah, right when convention season would have been spooling up. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Emerald City postponed it until the summer, and then yesterday they canceled it.
And that's really, it sounds like what's happening across the board. The big one's been canceled. Comic-Con been canceled. New York Comic-Con still not officially canceled yet. PAX West officially now digital only for this year. That's in your neck of the woods as well. Mm-hmm. But Comic-Con this past week also announced that in lieu of having a physical Comic-Con, which they're cross fingers will hopefully be able to have next July, they're doing Comic-Con at home. No hotels, no need to book in San Diego, no need to compete for tickets because it'll be free for everyone. What does that mean? Well, they're doing panels. They're doing pre-recorded panels. I think some live stuff as well. And I don't know what they're doing with merchants in terms of having an online store for exclusives, but it's going to happen around the same time in a little over a month's time now, when Comic-Con would have been July 22nd, free for all attendees. And it'll be a couple of days of watching live streams and watching recorded interviews, unveilings of trailers, and a time for people online to kind of get excited together about the world of pop culture.
Yeah. This will be my first Comic-Con. I'm very excited to go. I hope I can buy my mystery box.
Yeah,
somehow. I'm sure they will have merchandise for people to buy.
I'm gonna get a big H, the letter H, and I'm gonna put it outside my living room, on the entrance to the living room. And then before I watch the announcement trailer, I'm gonna wait in the hallway for 10 hours in a line. It's me and my cat. And then I'm going to get announced. I can go into Hall H, and then yep. I can watch it just to simulate the perfect experience.
Make sure it's live stream that. The red yeah. circle with the white letter H on there, just like it's mounted on the San Diego Convention Center. And you got to stay underneath a tent, and maybe J.J. Abrams will stop by and bring you
who knows?
Pizza the yeah. night before, right?
That would be great.
That's a real Comic-Con experience. So still more to be unveiled in terms of the programming, as they're calling it, but there will be some Comic-Con staples like a masquerade. I'm curious to see how they're going to do that cosplay contest, as well as things like merch and other activities that people can participate with at home. I'm sure retailers they're chomping the bit to recoup some of that lost revenue from selling directly to fans, and they'll have Comic-Con specials, which you know, the exclusives were always a big thing, and I'm sure the retail will, if not be as big as in person, it'll still be quite substantial for a lot of people who are shop for retail. And I'm sure just as frustrating for people who can't get the exclusives, because online waiting rooms, almost even less fun than an in-person line for waiting stuff, because you have technical problems. Never feels quite egalitarian. Better interconnections. The movie studios have always used Comic-Con to do big unveils and in Hall H. They book time, and it's always been a kind of transactional thing, right? Behind the scenes, they pay Comic-Con to not only have a big booth on the show floor, but to have that prestigious Hall H panel, because people tune in, and Entertainment Weekly writes about it, Variety writes about it. And studios, you know, they've had a push and pull relationship with Comic-Con. You know, Marvel for the longest time didn't do it as big, and then they came back and did that amazing Hall H panel last year with Kevin Feige. But they've also spun up their own events, like a D23 for Marvel to unveil stuff. And WB is going to do their own thing. The folks who own the DC Universe, they are going to hold in August a Warner Brothers virtual con. Following up Comic-Con, it'll be a 24-hour conference called the DC Fan Dome, and it will be interviews, first look screenings, cosplay contests, basically their own mini Comic-Con, with announcements and footage from DC movies in the works, such like James Gunn's Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman 1984, still not released yet, as well as things in the works like Shazam 2, Aquaman 2, and hopefully something to do with Superman, the Batman as well.
That's cool.
You know, when go ahead, Bill.
I was going to say, this feels a lot like what's been kind of happening to E3 over the last few years, where big companies are, instead of having a presence at E3 that's super expensive, they have their own event for a day offsite, focus on all of their stuff, live stream it on the internet, and Bob's your uncle for getting the word out. And I know a lot of people who make video games, and I know a lot of them prefer that, because it usually gives them more time to work on the video game than to have to split off and make a build for E3 or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if movie studios are going to start doing more things like that, instead of relying on these big events where everyone gets together. They're like, we'll just do our own thing. We have the internet. Everyone will say it'll be great.
They have the internet, and it doesn't bring the same amount of buzz in person, but if they were doing a live event, which many of them have done, they're going to fill those seats anyway. Mm-hmm. They're still going to get that same amount of, you know, the headlines, and people are still going to report on them. And it's sound strategy. You know, they don't have to pay to play to share, you know, to basically create these marketing experiences for fans to celebrate the things they love.
Yeah. Along the same lines, I this makes me wonder if Comic-Con itself, or organizations that run cons, you know, if this is successful for them, like in sort of the same way that the Trolls World Tour hit the theaters, and then afterwards they were like, hey, you know, that worked out pretty well. We're going to do the digital more often now, I think. I wonder if, like, a con like this, if they figured out how to do it well online, and the studios are still paying them, but they don't have to pay for the convention center, if it's actually better on the bottom line, and, you know, they get more people who can quote unquote attend, if it actually makes more financial sense to do these things online.
It can be both. They make way more money in person than what the studios would be paying, because the ticket prices, and these are at capacity, right? When Comic-Con was in person and it was 100,000 people, they could have sold that double and got another 100,000 people to pay $150 to be there. That's tens of millions of dollars that they're leaving on the table, which is, and all the retail stuff. And the celebrities want to be there because they get more out of that. They can make more out of that direct fan engagement. And the substitute, all these virtual events are free, and no one has cracked that nut of what is going to get people to pay what they would have paid for an in-person selfie, you know, location-based experience than do it online. I mean, I think it's definitely opening new doors for what they can explore in terms of having events, and it's forcing people to creative. I don't see the physical event going away anytime soon. If anything, the physical event, I hope, will be more focused for comic books, right? It can be more focused.
Yeah. I know we do BlizzCon every year, although we won't be this year, but they have a virtual ticket. So I think they do both very, very well. It's a smaller convention, only like 25,000 people. It's expensive. I think it's like $250 a ticket. So getting those tickets for in person, but there's a much cheaper option. I want to say it's less than $50 for this virtual ticket. Every event is filmed and live streamed. You have access to it live and archived. And for people who can't make it to BlizzCon because it's so small, it's hard to get tickets. It's expensive. You got to fly there. It's a way that they can experience it as close to as genuine as possible for a fraction of the price. It's not free like Comic-Con is doing. But I bet that helps Blizzard an awful lot put on a physical show because they're making revenue from this online source.
And they've tapped into something, they've tapped into the pay-per-view model where when someone buys the virtual ticket for BlizzCon, it's they think of it less as I'm spending $50 to attend a convention and more like I'm spending $50 to watch pay-per-view boxing because it's esports, because you can't miss it because you're seeing the championships for all these games that you play on such on a regular basis.
How important at these events are the lines to actually meet celebrities? When I went to our Comic-Con, Silicon Valley, that seemed like a big part of the show. I think I paid $20 to meet Brent Spiner, and worth every penny. Like, I really enjoyed that experience, and my son and I talk about it to this day.
Yeah.
Have any of these events that are digital or going digital, have they talked about how to do that over the internet? Maybe like 1 minute, you know, Skype calls with a celebrity for $20 or something like that?
I'm certain. I know for a fact that they have, and I know for a fact that it's something that they know is risky because you can't get the selfie. Even when you get to one-to-one, you know, however minutes of time, the value that someone puts on the interaction, so much of that is being in the same physical space. We hold that to a higher bar, and we're willing to pay more for that. People are willing to pay more for that. Even if the actual interaction they're getting, the exchange or the autograph is still there, you're getting an autograph mailed out, being able to take your own photo, like there's something about having that in your memory that you value more. Now, that's not to say there's no money in doing a virtual meet and greet. Cameo, which is a site that previously you could buy like basically visual voicemails. You could buy a short video clip. You could pay a celebrity and, you know, $50 and they will send you a greeting, a happy birthday greeting, or they'll read a poem or a certain message for a friend. That's been doing really well. And it's been really easy because celebrities can load up their end of the phone and then they can, I have half an hour to spare. Oh, I have 10 of these requests that come in. I can make $500 or however much I'm charging by just doing, you know, 10 meet and greets right now. And they can do it asymmetrically. They actually just launched this past week, live version of Cameos, which is exactly what you're talking about. It is like a 10-minute exchange, 10-minute live interaction, Zoom call essentially, with your celebrity. You can bring 3 family members in there at a certain time, and you pay a flat fee for it. And the celebrities determine the flat fee. A lot of the headlines were like Jeremy Piven. I think it was like, $50,000 for 10 minutes, some ridiculous amount, maybe not that much, but there's a whole range, and it's celebrities, you know, who may be very well known and very much in the zeitgeist, and ones that people may have just more fond memories of, but it's absolutely a business model that's being utilized and implemented right now, even outside of fan conventions. Speaking of WB, they're one of the big studios that in the lockdown, they're committed to putting movies in theaters, getting butts in seats as safe as possible. And they may be the only ones because no other studio has plans to put big tentpole movies in theaters this year except WB. Now, Chris Nolan, who makes movies to be seen on the big screen, has a movie Tenet coming out. And that's, they said it was coming out in July. It's been pushed to the end of July, pushed 2 weeks. And Wonder Woman 1984, which originally was supposed to be out this month and then pushed to the fall, is now getting slightly pushed to October. But they're hoping that maybe the movies will be in theaters for longer. And so it's less about the opening weekend box office. And if they're the only ones in theaters and only a quarter number of people able to fill those seats because of social distancing, but they're in the theaters for months at a time, it could be a very, very long tail of making money as opposed to just renting it at home. Which
I sure wish one of these guys would take a chance on big screen. You know, just take one of their big films, just one of them, and take a shot, put it in VR theaters, charge full price, and see what happens.
Knowing the numbers of big screen, I mean, I don't know the numbers, but knowing approximately the number of VR users, right? Like just doing the backwards math, it just, there's no way they're going to put a movie that they spent $100 million on for a potential audience base of just a couple million at most when we're talking about VR headsets. That just, I can't see it. And having watched movies in big screen, which is an enjoyable experience, you know, watching something like Top Gun and the Paramount films like Transformers, it's not the same. It's not the same as watching it on a big screen, a literal flat screen, big screen TV at home. And it's absolutely not the same in terms of the first time I want to enjoy that movie as being in a theater.
Oh, see, I'd have no trouble with that at all, especially with the higher resolution headsets. I mean, that certainly with the Index, it would be the most comfortable experience of the headsets that I've owned. And I would absolutely watch a film that way. Maybe it's not too late. Maybe this is the kind of thing that could happen day and date with the theaters. They could also release in VR. That way, everyone who wants to go to a theater can. But the problem is a lot of people who are more cautious aren't going to want to.
Well, I think maybe a better option isn't maybe theatrical movies, but if you're talking about appointment-based viewing, things that people clamor to watch the day they're released, so the opening weekend, you know, there's a lot of prestige television, like when Game of Thrones coming out, that I think would be very suitable for a shared big screen-like experience, because those are essentially big budget productions, and you never get a chance to see those on the big screen, and so big screen VR might be a great place to watch, like an HBO show that everyone's waiting to watch the finale of, a Westworld, or you know, whatever is coming up. Perry Mason is that new one that's coming up. Speaking of HBO, though, we've given HBO a lot of flack for their poor communication and launching of HBO Max, which I am personally very much enjoying, watching a lot of the content there. But they're trying to simplify things. They announced this week that they're killing HBO Go in name. So let's see if we can parse this. HBO Go, which was previously the app you downloaded to watch HBO in demand, if you were an HBO subscriber via your cable TV service.
Oh.
Make sense so far?
Yeah.
On board.
That service, the name is going away, and that will just be called HBO. Now, HBO Now, oh no, I'm sorry, HBO Go is going to play completely. That no longer will exist. HBO Now, which was previously the service that you could subscribe a la carte to HBO, independent of being tethered to a cable provider, that is just being called HBO. And then HBO Max is basically the same version of that, but with a new interface and a lot more content.
Okay.
Wait, what?
Still confusing.
Yeah. I thought,
wait, what is the right answer?
I thought you said HBO Now was becoming HBO Max.
Yes. There is no reason for HBO Now, which is now called HBO, to exist.
Okay.
Yeah. It is extremely confusing, and so much of this is tied to the cable providers, the contracts that HBO has with existing cable providers, which I'm sure the Comcast and the Time Warner cable, well, Time Warner is HBO. I'm sure the Comcast of the world and what's another local cable provider that's in America? I don't know.
AT&T?
Verizon's. AT&T is Time Warner, is HBO. That should be solved. But I'm sure Comcast has no interest in making it easier for people to understand what HBO Max is, because Comcast would rather people subscribe to Peacock, the NBC Universal Comcast subscription service launching later this year. Yeah, the streaming wars are messed up. Celebration, Star Wars Celebration, canceled also this year. Unfortunately, they're not going to do some type of big virtual event. It's one of those, it was only going to happen once every other year. And since episode 9 is already out, you know, it probably made sense for them to put on hold, and I think they're going to come back in 2 years at Celebration 2022. But there is Star Wars news, video game Star Wars news. This almost made it. If we had talked about PS5 last week, this would have been the top story this week. But Electronic Arts, which this last year has, or last couple of years, has gotten a bit of flack for its management of the Star Wars video game license with Battlefront 2 and the microtransactions. But they've kind of they've recovered from that. Jedi Fallen Order did very well and was well received. Well, they have announced their new Star Wars game, and it's Star Wars Squadrons.
Yes.
It's called X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, right?
Sure.
It's X-Wing versus TIE Fighter.
I am cautiously optimistic. Didn't they announce that this is a $40 game?
There's a lot to be optimistic about, and yes. So there's no gameplay. There's a cinematic trailer using, quote-unquote, in-engine footage. And EA Play, which is their E3 spinoff event, like what you talked about, Bill, that's happening today. Later today is when gameplay footage will be revealed for Star Wars Squadrons.
Today being Wednesday.
Thursday,
18th. Okay.
Yes. This afternoon. So unfortunately, we haven't seen it. Won't be able to talk about it until next week. But it is a single-player game with multiplayer, single-player narrative campaign for $40. Multiplayer 5v5, New Republic, so post-Jedi, before Episode 7. It's a kind of the Star Wars Resistance era, a little before the Resistance era. 5v5 cross-play between Xbox, PlayStation, PC, and VR.
Yes.
That's it.
And VR.
I can't believe that they are incorporating VR out of the gate. I mean, this is too good to be true. That's why I'm so cautiously excited, optimistic.
So $40 scared me because $40 said, whoa. Is that a lack of confidence on their end on this game?
It sounds a little bit casual. Like it sounds a little bit arcadey and
So I don't know what that signifies. I'm hoping that's them being smart about needing a big player base, multiplayer, to have this feel sustainable, right? They need this because people are spending time. If you think of the timeshare of like people spending time in Fortnite, Minecraft, Call of Duty, right? These are the multiplayer games that people, if you're going to pay $60 for a game or for free in PUBG or in Fortnite's and other PC games, right? And what people are streaming, that's the important thing. Isn't the money? It's the important thing is filling up that player base and then getting people to play it on the reg and having a populated, community. $40 could be the way to do that, and it's going to be free for the first 10 hours. I want to say for people who subscribe to EA's monthly subscription service, and then they get that as a discount back. So they're already on board. It will on the PC out of the box support HOTAS, joysticks, and throttles.
I didn't know that.
Ooh.
That was confirmed. So PC VR with HOTAS support.
I hope you can set up VR-only matches. I mean, because I'll be curious to see if there is an advantage one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But I would like to know that everybody else in my match, all 10 people, are using the same interface. Or, at least using the same headset/monitor. I don't know.
What if it's VR only Squadrons?
Oh man!
So I'm happy to go against Xbox and PS players, but my four co-pilots must all be VR, and maybe something in your cockpit where you see like augmented holograms.
Oh, that'd be so good,
dude! You're in VR.
that uses the head tracking of your Squadrons.
Around.
Oh my god, that would be so good.
Let player models have head. Yeah, that's we're already getting a lot with it being $40, VR support and HOTAS support.
And it's not even that far away. October?
Coming out early October. They're going to show this off at EA Play before EA or E3 was canceled. So can't wait to see the footage. I'm in. A lot of this is EA Motive. So this is internally developed. And some of the developers who are working on this have been already VR fans. If you look at their profiles, they're actually someone who previously worked on a Star Wars VR Battle of Endor fan mod is on this team as one of the designers. So they definitely are not just shoehorning VR in, it sounds like, but I really can't wait to see the footage. And if this is good, it could be something that pushes people to buy VR headsets, right? Even if it's PSVR, right? If they have, if you have a PlayStation and this is a better, a great way to, you know, the best way to play this is in VR. And EA's dipped their toes in it. Battlefront had like one VR demo in it.
It was a cockpit, mission. It was essentially like you flew, I think, was it an X-Wing? It was some sort of rebel, you know, craft. Yeah. It wasn't a game. It was more of an experience and it was very short.
The whole flight sim thing, I've always felt like is like the got to be the gold standard for VR. Probably one of the first VR things I did in the 90s, I think, was at the CN Tower in Toronto. And they had a VR headset that was this big. And you sat down in a plane and it was flying. You couldn't control it, but you could look around and it was kind of mind-blowing. Ever since that, I've always been thinking, like, why aren't flight sims and games like this, like, really going into VR? And to me, this game feels like that, and that's why I'm so excited about it.
There's a whole industry of, like, of people, enthusiasts, who want that simulator experience for VR. That's why Microsoft said that Flight Simulator, the new one, they're going to try to add VR support after launch, especially since they do all the simulations with the weather effects, and that game looks so good as well. It's controllers. It's tough. Like, they haven't figured out how to do physical controls when you have, you know, the Oculus touch controllers as the primary means to interact. And I think people are still figuring out how to feel tactile in a virtual cockpit.
Have you played Elite Dangerous, by the way, Bill?
No, I haven't played that yet.
It's one of the best cockpit games out there, and it's science fiction as well. I mean, it hits all the marks, graphics. The sound is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But it supports HOTAS, and it's very much in the simulator vein. I don't expect the Star Wars game to be anything like this. It's going to be much more accessible. But it's definitely worth checking out.
So here are my immediate fears. One, what are the environments going to look like? The trailer showed things like Cloud City, the atmospheric battles in 5e5, right, as well as your asteroid fights and big Star Destroyer battles. I think they said there's going to be a mode where, you know, you fight and then you try to destroy, as you're doing these dogfights and respawning, you're also trying to destroy the enemy big base, which could be like the big capital ships. One of the best parts about Battlefront and the multiplayer was they populated the map with AI, with fodder, right? And so there was a lot of, like, not only if was it 5v5 real players or however many real players you get, you'd also have the AI fodder that would count toward your kill count. And it'd essentially be the equivalent of creep, you know, in Dota, right? In one of those MOBA games where you're playing as the heroes, but there's also helping make the world fill out and feel like this massive battle, creep that on your side continuing, which they don't do no damage to you, but there's something you'll have to contend with and you'll have to get distracted by. Maybe I'm hoping that's what they'll go with. One other thing with flight sims, if you play Elite Dangerous and doing the dogfights, right? Dogfights in first person are not nearly as cinematic as a dogfight is in third person, or watching a dogfight being played out, like, right? from a singular point of view. You're so often you're just kind of like rotating and trying to get the enemy in your field of view so that you can lock on and auto aim and then, you know, launch a missile or something. I don't know how they're going to make dogfighting seem as thrilling.
Well, and traditionally with video games, like, the dogfight, space dogfighting has had to be so tailored for, like, playability. And multiplayer does not lend itself to that. Like,
no.
Traditionally, in the Wing Commander, you know, style games, you have to, or X-Wing or TIE Fighter, like, they're constantly throwing enemies in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you play like a person would, like, you know, I expect we'll be seeing, it's going to be a lot harder to track players. I'll bet there'll be a lot of AI, you know, fodder thrown in there just to keep things exciting.
Right, right. I would also love, if you look at how X-Wings fly, right, and I'm doing this for the video.
You mean scientifically speaking?
Yes. Okay. And cinematically speaking, right, in the Star Wars canon.
Oh, gotcha.
Right, X-Wings, it's in zero G, right? So while you're trying to simulate, you know, you're trying to evoke dogfights from World War II, which is what George Lucas pulled from when he designed the fights, it's not just following. They do these lateral floaty movements.
Yeah.
Right. And that's how they kind of dodge each other, is like, while you're moving in one trajectory, you know, along this line, they also bank and they kind of like float. And I wonder if they'll use that as a gameplay mechanic, where you get, like, with shortcuts, with bumper buttons, you can, like, in your flight path, get jostle, you know, almost like a tilt, like left and right, just so you can do some avoiding of the blaster fire.
Right.
And I wonder how that would feel in VR.
You're talking about sort of strafing, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a little bit of strafe, but not like a full strafe.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
you're not flying full velocity sideways, but kind of in your little volume. As think of the flight, this box of this cube, or the sphere, is your ship, and you're flying through space. You know, three doff essentially, because you're just doing mostly tilt. There's not yaw in space. But if you get kind of floaty lateral movement in that volume to be able to dodge blaster fire and make that something you can control as a player, then you could, there's some strategy there, and there's a little more cinematic dogfight feel that way.
Mm-hmm. I'm really curious to see what the different craft feel like. It looks like from the Rebel side, you've got the X-Wing, the Y-Wing, A-Wing, and the ship from Rogue One. I think this is the ship that I printed for Gary. Like, somebody posted it on Thingiverse, and it was like, you know, from his film. And so I printed that out for him. He loved it.
So the U-Wing?
And then you've got on the Empire side, you've got, I don't even, the TIE Bomber. Is it the TIE Interceptor?
Interceptor is the pointy one.
Then what's that one in the back, that big one? I have no idea what that is. But I wonder what those are going to feel like. I mean, obviously they have to balance it out. I'm sure that you'll have a rock, paper, scissors relationship between the different ships. But that's going to be interesting. That's going to be interesting to see what that even feels like. I do wish there was, and this is, I mean, obviously I love what we've heard so far, but if I could have one more thing, it would be a co-pilot in one of them. So you could, two people could be in the same craft.
And the snow speeder. Yeah. So I can fly and my buddy can sit backwards.
Exactly.
Behind me and get shot at while I fly and try and harpoon.
And if that, then the mic just goes dead.
Yeah.
Well,
Dak? Dak?
Yeah.
I think of like the PSVR experience, where you can do two outputs, like you can have two views, right? And if PS5 allowed for one person in PSVR to fly in headset and be the main pilot, and then on the big screen you would be the rear pilot and you'd be playing your mini game of, you know, destroy the TIE fighters behind you, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Fun.
Right
I mean, also I would be happy to fly the Millennium Falcon if either one of you would like to man the guns. I think that'd be fabulous.
And don't worry about the logic of how the turrets work and the ladders work, VR ladders. Yeah. So October's release date, and I'm sure we'll be talking about the footage next week as the gameplay trailers come out. Last bit of pop culture, because we are running a little long. Lego, some new sets. Lego a couple months ago announced that they are going to be targeting adults specifically. Like, this was, adults have been buying Lego forever, right? Adult fans of Lego, AFOLs.
Yeah.
And now they're like, we are going to design sets for adults, as if they weren't already with their $800 Star Wars sets. But now it's like 18 plus is a thing. It's like a whole category. So that Haunted Mansion set we talked about a month ago, that's under here. That A-Wing that you bought, Jeremy, that is technically under Lego's new 18 plus like target market. So on the box, I don't know if it says, what's the age, like the age recommendation? Is it 18 plus?
It looks like it based on the font that they used.
They used Helvetica.
They announced a new Lamborghini. It's massive. It's more pieces than even the Bugatti that they've done. They've done these big Technic cars, massive scale. They did an orange Porsche, a blue Bugatti, and now a lime green Lamborghini. That's looks amazing. And then on the traditional Lego system side, they also announced a Mickey and Minnie, high quality, $180, like 1,700 pieces, but sculptures essentially of Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse. And they look pretty good. They look pretty good. They had to bring back the space helmet in black, which they had not made for a long time, to be Mickey's nose and Minnie's nose.
Oh, wow.
That was a little bit of a trivia for you there. Wow. Mario is a whole license they have, and they unveiled 16 new sets, kind of like they did with Minecraft when they had a whole range of Minecraft sets. Mario is going to be a whole range of sets. I'm not going to go through all of them. Basically, this is the Mario, not minifig, but the Mario Lego piece that has LED eyes, and so animated eyes and mouth to interact with the actual world, the Mario level you're building. That's it for the Lego news. A little bit of movie news. Last of Us TV show. Last of Us 2, first of all, game comes out this week. I don't know if Tom play that, but that's getting amazing reviews. Perfect 10s everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
10 out of 10 on IGN. And you know, if you want to feel like shit, then go play Last of Us 2. That's what I'm hearing. If you want to feel like games are art, go play Last of Us 2. But congratulations to Naughty Dog for making an incredible game. And I can't wait to play it eventually. But they're also working on a TV show. And that's the one that Craig Mazin, who did Chernobyl, is co-writing. And the director for the Last of Us TV show will be the same director who directed all the episodes of Chernobyl.
Wow.
So,
Did you watch that, Bill?
I have not seen Chernobyl, no.
Yeah, it's worth watching.
So many good things, though.
Yeah, like, to check it out, man. It's even just the first couple episodes will get you hooked.
Excellent. Yeah. We've been watching the Disney thing, the prop show on Disney. It's mostly our jam right
prop
now.
Prop culture.
Pop culture.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I'm surprised you're not on it.
It's for collectors.
No one called
replicators.
Me.
Yeah. They want only the real stuff.
This is a replica. This is not the real one.
This is only a tribute. That's what you said. You should say, right?
This is only a tribute, exactly.
Hey, did you hear Disney is opening back up? Disneyland now. They announced that there'll be some sort of online, you know, website where you can register to attend Disneyland. But who knows when that will happen or how you'll be able to do that. But there'll be a limited quantity number of people allowed in there. Obviously, everyone will be spaced out in the lines 6 feet apart. Be interesting to see how they handle that.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have no shortage of people willing and wanting to spend money and go there, especially if the promise is lower capacity.
Exactly.
Like, they could raise the price and still make that profitable. Double the price and they'd still fill it. I mean, the local mall in this part of the neighborhood just opened up and the parking lots immediately are full. Everyone's in mass.
Oh boy.
But Stonestown, full.
You're kidding.
Packed. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
It's in San Francisco. Yeah. It's and you see like full families and kids wearing masks and these clear face masks, as well as the N95s. And it's strange. Goonies 2 has found a screenwriter.
Well, I mean, didn't find a screenwriter. Somebody wrote a script to Goonies 2. And they have, I guess they set up a meeting with Richard Donner, who directed Goonies. And then COVID happened, meetings postponed. But it's Adam Goldberg, the creator of the Goldbergs. Yeah. And I guess he's a huge super fan. And Josh Gad's helping him out with some publicity for this. And we'll see. I don't know if Richard Donner really cares anymore. I mean, I don't know. Did you guys watch the reunion show? Like, he's 90 years old, still sharp as a tack, but seems like he had enough of the Goonies even before it was in the theater.
Is that who the rights are with? Is it Donner or is it with the producers? Like Spielberg was heavily involved, and Spielberg might be. He's kind of open to ideas for sequels and reboots and continuations of these stories.
I would think so. Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, if they do that right, I would see that for sure.
And the Goldbergs, the show, is a whole love letter to the 80s anyway. And so, you know, it could be a perfect fit. You guys watching anything?
Mostly
streaming world?
Mostly the prop culture, which is funny because I made a bunch of YouTube videos like 8 years ago that I called prop culture.
Wow, Bill.
I mean, like, I thought this was going to be a show I would make. I made like 4 episodes like that on YouTube. But no, Dan Lanigan is doing the new show and it looks amazing.
Norm and I have already commented multiple times on what a great name that is. I didn't know you deserve all the credit.
Hey. Heard it here first. Jeremy, anything on your end?
I did watch the Dave Chappelle special that Netflix dropped surprise on YouTube, which I thought was awful cool of them. It's a relatively short special. You know, I don't even want to know what they paid for it, given what they paid for his previous specials. But It's Dave Chappelle's sort of, you know, response to people calling him out for not saying anything in the past few weeks post George Floyd. It seems like it's a special that he that recorded in his hometown in Ohio. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of set in a field and everyone's socially distanced and he's up on stage and it's very, very intimate.
Yeah. I watched it. It was very, so at the beginning it showed people getting their temperatures taken, everyone with masks, spreading everyone out. And it was about a half hour. It was actually very serious. There were some laughs, but it was very enlightening. I wouldn't be surprised if they filmed more there, if they filmed more than half an hour there and we see more from this event in the future. I can see that. That'd be kind of cool. But the video itself already was fantastic, and I recommend folks watch it.
Me too.
Yeah.
And my recommendation, as I said on Stolen Title, is this Amazon movie, The Vast of Night. Jeremy, this one's for you. It is a Twilight Zone, heavily inspired by Twilight Zone movie set in the 50s. And it's fantastic. Slow, small film, but big story and great acting. First time director. And it is very much a Amblin style film.
Wow. High praise. Where is it available?
Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Full movie there. All right. Let's move on to our next segment. We're going to skim by technology real fast this week because there's a lot of VR to talk about. But a couple things in tech. There is the FDA's first approved prescriptive video game.
Prescription, dude. Prescription video game.
What does that mean?
That means 2020 has gotten even weirder. This is
so
a
you can get a prescription. Your doctor can say, I'm
yes.
going to write you a prescription to play this game. That's the only way you can play this game.
Yes. Huh. Yes. Okay. This is a prescription for kids between 8 and 12 who have attention hyperactive disorder, ADHD. And apparently this study that was funded by the same people who made the game, mind you, this study showed that after 20 minutes a day for 5 days a week for a month, they had no attention deficit on one measure of attention deficit. I think like 33% of the kids. So it's like, it's not, you know, it could work for you. It could help. And even the study says it's not a replacement for traditional methods, you know, therapy and medication, but it's interesting. It's interesting that they are making this correlation between video games and therapy. I'm happy to see that. This whole thing kind of strikes me as a little dirty in that, like, we have people now tapping into video games to take advantage of this, you know, sweet, you know, sham we call American health system right now. And like, if we can get the insurance companies to pay for whatever they're going to charge for this lackluster video game so that some, you know, you can prescribe it to kids, it costs nothing to make a copy of. You know, when anybody could probably recreate the effects of this video game for free and put it on the App Store and try to help people and just put it out there and say, try this, it could help. That would be a much better story rather than this company that spent like 5 years researching this video game on 800 kids. And like, you know, they're going to charge a fortune for it. But
I wonder if there's going to be a different company's going to make the generic knockoff of this video game.
Generic.
If your prescription plan doesn't cover the name brand one, there'll be a generic one that's much cheaper. You can totally get.
Yeah. You make sure your internet is registered to Canada, right? You're geolocated to Canada is the only way you can download the cheap generic version.
Yep.
For free.
I mean, that's true, but like, you know, obviously generics have to wait. They can't make generics right out of the gate. They have to wait X number of years. And honestly, like this, if they're going to pay so much to develop this thing, they're going to take this to court if anybody does try to knock it off and make a game that's similar to it. But it's whatever. Taken at the face, it is weird. We have a video game that can be prescribed to children now by doctors.
Is it fun? Do kids like it? That's a big question. Like, it's not going to be helpful if kids find it boring, or if they you know, if it's not going to capture their attention or encourage their attention. Yeah. Yeah. This is a weird 2020 bit of news. Okay. Humble Bundle has a amazing bundle. The Fight for Racial Justice Bundle has $1,200 worth of games, books, comics that you can buy for a fraction of that, $30. And for $30, you get things like,
dude, Hyperlight Drifter, Spelunky, BioShock,
Global Space Program,
BioShock Remastered. Yeah, like, I mean, there's just title after title in here that's worth the $30 entry fee alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of, and I'm ashamed to admit how many video games I haven't played in the last few years, but I've never played Spelunky. Like, all the games you just mentioned, I have not played yet. So for $30, oh my goodness.
Elite Dangerous is in here.
Oh my goodness. Sold.
And this comes off the, I think they must have waited for itch.io's to end, because itch.io just made history. They had a $5 bundle. Yeah, they had a $5 bundle that ended up pulling in $8 million that had a lot more games, but not as heavy hitters in terms of like the name recognition. Mm-hmm. It's definitely some names that we recognize, but not as many like bigger AAA titles. So I think this one's going to probably go even higher, just because it's a Humble Bundle. It's a bit more recognizable of a, mm-hmm. of a brand than itch.io is for indies. But good on them. This is great. They're both going towards NAACP Legal Defense Fund. So this is fantastic.
And then finally, Apple did a stealth upgrade of their MacBook Pro 16-inch with option for the new AMD Radeon 5600M GPU. And I haven't seen the benchmarks yet, but y'all waiting for news out of WWDC, which is happening next week.
Next week.
Oh my gosh, that's insane. Okay, and that does it for tech really quick. So let's get to, press the button.
The VR Minute, virtual reality this week.
Whew, a lot of VR as well, but we'll try to go through it quickly. So first of all, Upload VR did a summer showcase, kind of like their version of E3, just for VR. A bunch of game trailers, a bunch of announcements, and we'll go through a couple of those. So there have been ports for games that were previously on PSVR or Steam. Now they're making their way to Quest. Trover Saves the Universe. This is for you, Bill, since you have a Quest now.
Okay.
Trover Saves the Universe is Justin Roiland, who created the Rick and Morty game, Rick and Morty show, and wrote Rick and Morty. He did a game for PSVR called Trover Saves the Universe. It's hilarious. Same art style, same voice acting, and that's coming out in Quest later this year. In Death, which is a game that we've loved. This is a roguelike, first-person roguelike, where you survive onslaught waves. You traverse these procedurally generated worlds and try to survive as long as possible. With
archery game.
Melee and archery weapons. Is it just archery?
Yeah, there's no melee in this game. It's all
that's
archery.
That's right. It's just archery. It's teleporting with archery as well as combat with archery. That's also coming to...
What was the name of that one?
In Death.
You got it. In Death.
And in fact,
I'm just right.
It looks to me like... Can you still hear me, Norm?
Yep.
It looks to me like In Death... like this is a good example of it being able to compare, you know, PC to Rift to Quest graphics. It looks like you are going to see some sacrifices. It's one of those things, though, that I bet when you put on the headset, it's less than you think it's going to be. But you can play In Death right now on Steam or Oculus Store and just use Link. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's a great game.
I feel like it's a game that also will benefit from being tetherless, especially since you're trying to survive these worlds. And
that's a really good point.
And shoot that arrow to teleport, right? The orientation will be flipped around a bunch. There are a couple new games that were announced, Ghost Patrol and Traffic Jams. These are both games from the folks at Arizona Sunshine Devs. Is that right? Vertigo Arcades. Yeah, these were previously location-based VR games that they had set up that because of the lockdown, they're now pushing out to the home stores, the Oculus stores. And so
Wait a minute. Are you sure about that? Because according to Upload VR, this game is coming to VR arcades at an unspecified... Yeah. Well, I don't know. That's what this says.
So it's not coming home.
I think there's these are more VR arcade games. These are more location based.
Okay, so they're sticking with that for Ghost Patrol.
Yeah,
And then the same, I guess, with Traffic Jams. Although Traffic Jams is
I think is different because this is more of an asynchronous thing where you're playing with people on cell phones. Sort of like was it Acorn or Acron? Acron.
Yeah.
So you got one person who's in VR directing traffic in the middle of the road, and everyone else appears to be like sending meteors down on them, probably controlling the traffic itself. Who knows what? But it's one of those. Everyone else is on a cell phone. One person's in VR game. I love those games. So far, everyone I've tried has been a huge hit with my family.
And in VR, you're literally in the middle of traffic.
Yeah.
You're kind of putting your hands out, being a traffic cop. Nothing wrong with that. Pistol Whip's getting a big update. The Heartbreaker mode, as well as the Concierge campaign. So it's also coming to PS VR at the end of July. And it's a whole new set of songs with the Heartbreaker mode. And what's the Concierge campaign? This is launching end of this year. It's an action pack alongside an action pack. So it's tying, I guess, levels together to be framed by a cinematic story.
Wait, is this the Pat Benatar song? Is that what they're hitting at? If there's an 80s mode, I'm finally in on Pistol Whip. That's what I'm saying.
I don't think they've licensed that. I think they're evoking with Heartbreaker more chilled out action, music for lovers. So they're definitely pulling up that same string, but not that same song.
All right. I was excited for a minute.
And then, Jeremy, remember that game, The Rig, that we did a preview for years ago?
The space game?
Space game that's noir, mystery game. There's a new trailer for that, and it's coming later this month.
Cool.
It's going to come out, yeah. The Rig, A Star Map to Murder.
Ooh.
And then Lo-Fi, the cyberpunk open world game that's now in alpha that you can support. That they launched a new trailer for that, and they announced they're coming out for PS5, though not sure if that means for PS5 VR or for flat screens.
This is a strictly VR game. I don't think you can even play this in flat screen.
So I don't know why there's a PS5 logo. It could be the first PS5 VR game announced.
I like Hey, that's an interesting angle.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And then Disney put out one of their first VR short films.
Yeah, I
did. It's $3. Yeah. It's called Myth, and it's in the world of Frozen. And you know, it's kind of like Oculus Story Studio. They try to do this like this short film music, heavily music inspired narration, and you're watching it in a VR headset, and it didn't do that much for me.
Yeah, me neither. My daughter liked it. My daughter's the Frozen fan in our family, and she liked it. Like, she was gleeful. She was watching everything. Her, you know, it's like, oh wow. She has not asked to see it again, but you know, it's. To me, it was like it was almost a step back from the old Story Studio stuff in some respects. I feel like they were evolving interesting things with near field and real 360 stuff. This was really trying to focus your attention in specific directions. And the action that was going on, it wasn't all that engaging. I have no problem with non-interactive VR content. But yeah, I'm kind of with you. And I think the big thing that held this back is there isn't any character. It's really just sound driven, narration driven, and like environmental effects.
And non-interactive was the big thing. Like it's so passive. They try to do things with the, you know, Aurora Borealis, and they had the original score. And while it's set in the universe of Frozen, it didn't capture a lot of the character stuff that you would have.
Yeah.
That people would watch Frozen 4. They did do kind of an interesting thing with trying to get your attention because it's 360, so you're turning all the way around. And if you weren't looking where the action was, they would dim the world a little bit, which is, you know, that's an interesting way to try to get your to focus you. Did you do that other short film? It's on Quest now from the same publisher as Pixel Ripped, Aviori.
Didn't you watch that at GDC?
GDC, yes. It's now on the Quest store. And it's 100% worth it. Let me try to find the name of this. Bill, I'm going to give this a recommendation as well. It's, I think it's like $12, I want to say. And it's called The Line. It's a VR narrative. It is interactive, and it does work with hand tracking, so you don't need controllers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So there is a little bit of interaction, and it's, I think, a much better exploration of VR storytelling than what Disney was able to do with their Frozen one. The Line. It's also in the Oculus store, and that one is worth it.
Oh, wow. You know, Trover comes out tomorrow.
Oh, well, there you go.
So, yeah, diggity.
I think that's it for VR news. Anything else, Jeremy?
No, I don't. I think you nailed it. I think you got it.
All right. Well, that does it. We made it.
There is that one thing. There's that what's that kayak game?
Oh, Phantom Covert Ops.
That's coming out next week.
Next week.
Yeah, that's like a one a lot of people have been looking forward to. So I don't know if we're getting access to that, but that would be something that I'm looking forward to.
Yes, we'll make sure that happens, and we'll probably talk about it next week as well. I can say that based on the preview build I played, it was one of the few games that got me nauseous, and I couldn't spend as much time in it as I wanted to. So it's definitely for people with VR legs, because you're in a kayak and they do things that you have to do smooth turning in the kayak. There's no snap turning because you're actually paddling, and it just didn't work for me.
Does the if you are sitting in a boat?
Yes.
Does the boat bob up and down?
No bobbing.
I spent a lot of time on boats. I'm pretty good with seasickness, but that generally tends to be the thing that makes people sick. And I'm wondering if they're simulating that accurately.
Absolutely no bobbing. The only thing it's like once you're paddling, it's just smooth. There is acceleration as you're paddling. So the faster you paddle, the faster you go, not the extreme amount. But the thing that really got me is because so much of it is like dipping your paddle into the water, and then that gets you to pivot a certain way as you would on a kayak, that turning.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it for more than half an hour. So that's it for this week's podcast. Bill, thank you so much. It's so good to see your face. He's frozen. Bill's frozen.
Perfect
face.
Timing.
Your internet's dropping out, Bill.
Yeah.
But congratulations on the impending book launch. We're going to have links to Foamsmith 3 below. People should check it out. Foamsmith 3, and as well as subscribe to Bill and Britt's YouTube channel, Punish Props Academy. Amazing tutorials. We got to have you back in San Francisco at some point.
Yes,
once definitely. Travel is possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll be we'll hopefully soon be back in the shop a little more, filming more videos as well, especially once the book is done, which it is done and hopefully on its way to my house now. And we'll have more links for that in the next couple of weeks when we finally launch.
Awesome. The internet's breaking down. You're getting all garbly, which is a perfect time to wrap up this show. We do have an outro this week. This one's a vintage one, I think. And let's see if it comes through. It's created by an old fan favorite, Justin, a.k.a. Speed. Here we go.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
That's it.
Wait, is that Justin, a.k.a. Speed?
No.
That would have been funny. No, I believe his name is Michael.
That's it.
You get shout-outs if you make outros for us. You make intros for us. You can always find that if you just search Tested Podcast Outro in Google, and you can download the SoundCloud file or create something from scratch completely if you want to create a 15-second or shorter intro theme for this podcast. Good to see you guys. We'll be back next week. Bill, hope to see you sooner rather than later. And bye.
Bye.